Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and have quite a bit of news this week. I guess for any of you that were paying attention to the Fed, they've raised the rates again, 0.25, and kind of hinted that they may be done for a while, which I don't know about that. I have a feeling that they won't be done for a long while, but maybe they're going to pause at least the rapid rate hikes. Dan, are you with us today?
I'm here.
Hey, outstanding. And let's see, I guess we've already played the disclaimer, although pre-recorded. So let me just say quickly that you're going to hear certain strategies, perhaps, certain new concepts, tax planning-wise, et cetera, today. We hope you learned something new. Please don't run out and try to implement these right away, and especially don't run out, try to implement them, and then call us later and explain what you did and how we could have messed that up so badly if that were to occur. Because we typically try to learn enough, don't we, Dan, on the front end to avoid those bad outcomes. But that's what will happen, and it is unfortunate because the answer to almost every question we're asked is maybe. Right, Dan?
Many times it's a maybe. We need to discuss, you know, find further details possibly.
We've got a mechanism to do that. It's on our website at baplanner.com. That's baplanner.com. And there's a link at the top right called Intake Forms. And if you will follow that link to a page that has four different forms on it, and if you'll fill those out, we'll have enough information we need to get started. As we were discussing earlier, getting ready for the show, Dan, the debt ceiling is probably the big news this week. You want to catch us up on what transpired, I guess, late last night?
Well, I just read this morning that they do have a deal that McCarthy's taken to the House to write. He's supposed to deliver and give the House 72 hours. Now we got 3 days to read these, 500 pages,
yeah.
600, 6,000 pages, or whatever it is, of deal.
We don't actually have to pass it to be able to read it. Is that what you're saying, Dan? That's pretty
well,
amazing.
In this case, he says he is. So he's giving them 3 days to do so, but that's just getting it right down to the wire again.
Well, but, you know, apparently Yellen also has confirmed that we really have a little longer than what they thought. Surprise, surprise. And by the way, I'm not sure why a little old thing like the debt ceiling, the legal limit of what we're supposed to be able to borrow to spend, would slow these guys down, right? I mean, seriously.
It would only slow
sure.
them down to decide whether they're going, who they're going to pay. You know, they're going to pay grandma or they're going to pay some fat cat. You know, that's the deal.
Well, I don't know, but I don't like, and I think some others. I noticed Chip Roy isn't real happy about the latest version of the spending reduction levels.
Well, frankly, he's never going to be happy until it's in control. I mean, that's just his modus operandi, I believe. He's going to be aggressive with it, and somebody's got to be. Somebody's got to lead the pack, and I think he's there.
Well, I'll tell you this. I get a kick. Well, I don't get a kick because it's serious, but I find it interesting that there's so much talk about, well, how can we harm the American people, the economy? You just go down the list on all the scare tactics that are used by those that are insisting on a, quote, clean debt ceiling bill. And they don't seem to think that a $32 trillion deficit, really more like $132 trillion, they don't think that does the same thing. It's like, you know, a death by a thousand cuts, essentially, right? And I just find it remarkable at times that they look the other way when they look at the damage that, that's caused. And I tell you, the world's a different place today, and we better start acting like we may have some more multiple billion-dollar skirmishes. You know, do you call it a war if it was never authorized by Congress? Is that a war? I'm not sure what we call it. A conflict? Is that what those
are
called?
Yeah, that's what we call the ones that are not declared. We call them conflicts.
Right. Well, you know, I forget what we're up to on the Ukraine support that we've provided. It's obviously more than a few billion at this point. You know the number, Dan? I've seen various numbers bannered about.
I do not know the number, but somebody mentioned that we may have overstated it by $3 billion.
Well, so what's a few billion?
It depends on whose pocket you're talking about, I think.
Yeah. Well, the bigger issue, I think, is that it's got hardly any strings attached in terms of accountability, from what I can read. And I just find that remarkable. I mean, it's just remarkable how easily the folks in Washington will spend our money without there being any hard, I mean hard, accountability for all that money ends up. I mean, you're talking about one of the most corrupt economies and countries ever. From what I've read, I mean, I guess those could be adjectives that aren't necessarily true, but it's bad. I mean, the level of corruption is bad. For Joe Biden to think it was bad, not what, 6 years ago, you know, it'd have to be pretty bad. But anyway, so let's see, what else is news? Well, speaking of the debt ceiling, I noticed where at least one or maybe a couple of the debt rating agencies were making noises this week, but I don't think I saw where any of them actually took action to reassess the U.S.'s debt rating. And I guess I would say I'd make a similar comment. If $32 trillion deficits cumulatively, real ones, don't bother them, why does going down to the wire on extending the debt ceiling deal bother them, right?
Yeah, but, you know, the debt guys, the debt raters, are just saber-rattling. You know, there's one major one, I can't remember the name, Nathan, but it was talking about this week. He said, man, this is just going to be horrible. And then, of course, rates moved up on the short term. The T-bill rates were at one point, 1 month T-bill rates were at 6%, over 6% at one point this week. Maybe it closed at that. I mean, it's a very high rate. I mean, it is inverted right now. You know, short term are higher than the longer term rates. It's really quite intriguing from an investor standpoint. You know, what does he put his money into? It's upside down right now, is what they call it, inverted, you know, as far as the long term to the short term rate. So it needs to get it straightened out. It needs to come to a conclusion. It's going to be a compromise, there's no doubt. And everybody doesn't get their what they wanted, but something's got to happen. Yeah. It's got to get straightened out.
Well,
so we stop talking about it, get on with the world.
Yeah. Speaking of inverted, how about those Celtics? Did you catch any of that game last night? They're forcing a game seven after everybody, including the, you know, ESPN and Fox, all the prognosticators had written them off back when it was 3-0, right? They were down 3-0. And, you know, has anybody ever there's nobody in the history of the NBA has ever won a playoff series after being down 0-3. That's going to be amazing if they pull that off. But anyway, okay, well, we didn't sign up to talk about basketball, but as I was scrolling the news, it's like, man, how can you not? Of course, they're not done yet, but anyway, it's a
– I think that's worth mentioning. That's a big deal.
It's like Ukraine versus Russia, and it looks like there might be a game 7 in that fight as well, right? A little counteroffensive getting ready to take place. By the way, as part of the debt ceiling, if I remember right, we agreed, or they're agreeing, the parties, to keep military spending. Let's see, are we keeping it the same or are we actually increasing it a bit? I've seen different assessments on that.
Now, it's going to be its own little package, I believe. It'll stay out there. It's got to stay strong. There's no doubt about that. We can't stop that spending.
Well, I would agree, but I would also think, don't we at some point get the benefit of some technological advances? Aren't drones effectively, some of them are cheaper than soldiers and airplanes
and pilots.
Other stuff? Yeah, I mean, I know they're not free, but I also know, if I'm not mistaken, some of the more effective short-range drones are, I don't know, in the hundreds of thousands, not millions, right? And in maybe low hundreds. And I don't know, but I'm all for a strong military because, I mean, if you're looking around, a lot of knowledgeable military, ex-military, I don't know about the current ones, they probably can't talk, but they think we're very soon to have a conflict, you know, with the Taiwan area, I guess you might call it.
And scary.
Yeah, it really really is. And of course that could involve a North Korea scenario as well, and they're making noises about their nukes, which is kind of scary. That's really scary. I would suggest, I would say that China actually has something to lose when it comes to the relationship with the U.S. I don't know that North Korea does, right? We're not really giving them much anymore. But anyway, okay, well, let's talk about the world of real estate. And it looks like from all the news we had this past week, several major projects announced. I don't know. I guess, you know, we've had some defaults in the recent past. You know, Dan, we talked offline about the big Houston syndicator that had 3,200 units foreclosed on, and apparently there's another 1,000-unit property that just this past week with that group was foreclosed on. And I think, you know, those kind of hit close to home, and they're in the news enough to where we are, you know, thinking the whole world's like that, and yet it's not. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff going on out there, and you know, it's interesting to look at all the loans that are happening at rates that work. You know, cap rates that make people money, and across multiple segments. I saw a couple industrial or light industrial projects announced this week, several multifamily, big dollar type multifamily projects. And, you know, it's interesting, you know, when you look at, and part of what we look at, obviously, is we take these deals apart for our clients when they're interested in investing in them, is we're looking at not just focused on individual factors like cap rates, equity multiples, IRRs, et cetera. You got to step back occasionally and look at the forest. And one thing I noticed with this particular syndicator that got into trouble, I mean, first of all, these were massive projects in terms of number of units. And it's not that it was just the number of units, but part of the issue, as I see it, Dan, and I don't know, I've been looking at these deals for 20 years now, 20 plus years. When I see things purchased at the bottom of the price continuum, it always gives me pause. And I'm not suggesting that just because you spend $300,000, or what was the deal we looked at, or just tangentially, I think it was a news article a week ago. What was it, Dan? It was $700,000
a door. Yeah, over $700,000, almost $800,000 per unit you're talking about.
Yeah, that doesn't ensure success. In fact, that might actually be as bad as buying a unit for $70,000, depending on where it's at, depending on what the rents are, depending on the synergy with other projects that might be in the neighborhood, you know, if the same syndicator owns. That deal is a Brooklyn, New York-based deal. It's a totally different market than say, a Phoenix or even a San Francisco deal. Yeah, but bottom line is, even in Houston, Texas, when you pay $70,000 for a unit in the not-too-distant past, and they're the types of class properties they are, these couldn't have been better than a Class C, I don't think. First of all, the basic model that help us make money, we're going to talk about how do we make money in real estate apartment syndications, because the industry's taken a bad rap here in the last month or so. I would suggest, specifically referring to a Wall Street Journal article about Texas syndications. And, you know, I guess, you know, it's important to understand what's the difference between a multifamily project and, say, a single-family rental, because I know a lot of our listeners are doing single-family rentals and don't really think about multifamily that much, or maybe don't even understand why it's different until they wake up someday and they're in their 50s, and all of a sudden, you know, that multifamily way of making money starts to make a lot more sense, right? And so let's do this. Let's take a break, and then we'll return, and we'll talk about what is the difference between how we make money in the multifamily space versus single family. And I think you'll understand why maybe the news articles don't quite, they must have been written by some single family rental folks, is I think what I might surmise based on how they overlook a few key factors. Anyway, we'll be right back with more of the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and Dan DuBose, CPA, here in a few minutes.
Because I am a seeker, and you are a keeper. You are a leader, won't you show me the way?
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be A Planner Show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to nathan@npross.com, nathan@npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Like the song, Bobby McGee, I'm just longing to be free. ages. And there are many just like me
with big dreams and faded cheeks.
Okay, welcome back to the final segment. Or no, it's not the final segment. It's the second segment of the Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And I'm just here with my my guest, Dan Dubose, CPA. And we've been talking debt ceiling. And I ended that last segment with a mention about some current articles. Specifically, there was a Wall Street Journal article. Actually, I think there's been two in the past week or so. And they talk about the concept of an investor doubling their money in 3 to 5 years is like, you know, that's just the hokiest idea I've ever heard. And, you know, what that tells me is that the author has absolutely no experience with multifamily investing and understand that that's exactly what can happen. I've watched it. I've participated in it for quite a while. And I'll just tell you what may surprise them, and it may surprise some of our listeners, and it's why I suggest the natural progression of a real estate investor is typically to start with single family. Wouldn't you say, Dan? I mean, do you see that with the clients you work with as well?
Oh, yes. Yeah, certainly the single family is, in my case, is the majority of the investors. It seems there's maybe one house, maybe 20 houses. It may be
the house they lived in before they moved to Houston, or they moved away from Houston and they decided to hang on to it and rent it. It may be a condo in Austin or College Station where their children were going to university, and they decided, hey, it's already gone up in value in the last 4 years. Why not hang on to it, rent it? They kind of get started, and then, you know, they hear radio shows and other mediums and decide, well, this has been pretty good so far. Let's go another one. And before you know it, they may have four or five. They may even have one of the spouses qualifying as a real estate professional because of the significant tax benefits that can result. And they stay in that single family world. And, you know, the positives with single family is that they can make money. There's no question they can make money. However, the way it's made, the math and metrics involved, totally different than the way we make money in multifamily investments. And, you know, with single family, Dan, I don't care how well someone runs a single family rental. It matters not when you go to sell it, typically, how much rental income you're making. I mean, it can impact it a little bit, perhaps. But what matters when you go to sell that home, Dan, what's the single biggest restriction on how much you're going to sell it for, or the cap, let's say? Is it the current cap rate? Is it, you know, anything we look at, like internal rate of return with multifamily? Is it the
market?
It's the market. That's right. And all that means is what your neighbor sell their home for 2 months ago or 2 weeks ago, as the case may be, in your neighborhood. That's your limit on how much per foot. You should always break things into, in real estate, the real estate world, we think about price per feet, or if you're overseas, price per meter. You know, that's the common delineator that you can compare properties. And a lot of Mr. and Ms. Homeowner types are going to say, well, wait a minute, doesn't it matter if it's got a swimming pool or a putting green, you know, in the backyard, or it's got a membership with the country club? Yeah, those are small intangibles that might tweak value, maybe not, may tweak it downward. You know, have you ever had a swimming pool, Dan? Well, you actually do have a swimming pool, right?
Yeah. And
well, I was going to say, the swimming pools are kind of like, as I used to say, as one that used to have a lake property with the complement of boats, the Sea-Doos, etc. Those are things that you want your friends to have. Swimming pools, lake houses, boats, airplanes. Those are things you want your friends to have so that you can borrow or participate. It's kind of like grandkids, I guess you might say, right? And you can give them back when you're done. And in any event, the comp, as we call it, is what dictates what you sell that single family for. Now, what dictates a multifamily transaction, Dan, is a concept we refer to, well, it's a combination of things that all work together. The net operating income of the property and the amount, the cap rate, which is the effectively the return that a buyer is going to seek to pay you whatever you think you're going to sell it for. And, of course, a lender typically has to be involved on that discussion because they're the ones that are actually going to fund a percentage. We call that a loan to equity or loan to value, LTV. And those three elements added or combined are what dictate how much I can sell a multifamily for. So take the older class C, C minus, even D plus property that we can buy, quote, on the cheap, and even the $60,000 or $70,000 range. There's nothing wrong with that type of property if you turn it into something that's comparable to other properties in the area that have higher rents. That's the name of the game. And I've watched it so many times where a group of, you know, 100 to 150 investors will each put in their $50,000 to $100,000 or more.
With the right manager.
Well, I was just getting ready to say, with an experienced lead partner or syndicator or sponsor, those names all typically refer to the same party, that's actually been to the finish line before. And it's, I understand, you know, everybody's got to get to that first finish line. That's fine, unless it's my friend. I'm not investing with the guy that's doing or gal that's doing their first project. I'm going to hope they got enough friends and family where they can undertake that on their own. And I'm also going to suggest they need to be a passive partner before they're a lead partner, so they understand how it's done. And they need to be a partner with somebody that is successful at getting to the finish line of a project where, you know, they take something that's performing under market. They amenitize it, if you want to pick a word, to get it to where they can raise the rents over the next 3 years or so, get it up to market rate rents. And when you do that, your net, all the things that we just talked about, your net operating income goes up. Therefore, the amount of money that an investor is willing to pay you will go up, typically, and the bank will be willing, one, to entertain a loan. Right now, a lot of banks, unless you've got a story to tell, like, you know, we took a beat-up old apartment and turned it into something beautiful, and beauty is in the eye of the tenant. You know, there's not a single piece of real estate, at least in America, that doesn't look better with a tenant in it. Would you not agree with that statement, Dan? And how do you keep tenants in them, right? You provide a product at a good rate for the amenities that you're delivering. And if those units are empty, which if you read the story in the Wall Street Journal, the stories, you're going to see, Dan, that part of the group involved, I'm not going to mention their name, they started off, I think in some cases, they bought these properties, and these were not, I'm just going to say it, these were not nice properties. These were not the kind of properties that you would live in, Mr. DeBose. And so anyway, when they were foreclosed on, the occupancy was down in the mid-50s and maybe low-60s. Well, wow. That's no way to make money in the apartment business. And if you're not,
green,
I mean, I don't.
We'll drive away a tenant pretty quick.
Say again?
a green swimming pool will drive a tenant away real
well,
quick.
Well, that was one of the issues. Rats were the – you can read about all this in the Houston Chronicle. These were properties that our illustrious Mayor Turner even talked disparagingly about when he went out. You know, you know the ones that were in the paper recently. And not that that would in and of itself be a deal killer, but I would say it'd probably take a lot to get those kind of remarks out of Mayor Turner. But anyway, these things were not being run correctly. They probably, if we had access to their underwriting, would probably see that they weren't underwritten like a successful operator, sponsor, syndicator, lead partner, etc., would have underwritten that property to actually bring it up to market. And of course, some properties you probably can't bring up to market. And so, you know, that's I remember. Well, I don't want to get into the stories, but I'll just tell you, there's certain things you can check out in a neighborhood, certain shopping venues, as an example. Like, say, a Walmart. That's a big name brand. My comments on the air won't hurt them, right, Dan? They'll still be doing okay. And I shop at Walmart. I just try to park uphill because of all the potential damage that will result from a cart on the loose, right? And in any event, just go walk around a Walmart, and you'll get a feel for whether you're going to be able to increase rates in that neighborhood 20-25%, which is probably, on average, what you need to do if you're going to fully exploit the value of an apartment building. So as a syndicator. So again, a comp sets the cap for what you're going to sell your single family rental for, and the NOI, which could happen. I've seen successful syndicators take a property, do cosmetic repairs, if you're talking about a 6 month to a year conversion, it's usually going to be fairly cosmetic, and then they may put a smart home package in, add a bark park for the dogs, maybe put up some covered parking. I mean, there's a number of things that you can do right away in addition to cutting expenses, where when you think about it, you can increase the net operating income, and in some cases significantly, but in all cases the valuation is a multiple. Dan, you want to step through the math on a $100,000 increase, what that's worth in valuation terms, or you want me to give you a suggestion?
Well, you take $100,000, you talk about adding that to your NOI, your net operating income.
That's right. And then let's assume
5%, that's 20 times, that's $2 million adding value at a 5%. And that's significant.
That's right. Is it five? Is it 2 million?
Well, I'm just saying five because I do the math.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's a multiple of the hundred. And so, you know, when you think about it, that's how you make money, and that's how people can, in fact, double their money in, you know, what seems like just an incredibly fast period. And I don't know.
You just said you got a $100,000 increase in NOI at a 5% cap, which is probably low right now, but that would be $2 million. And you take that $2 million you just added to NOI, you could go borrow at the old time rates at 60%. You're going to be taking out a $1.2 million loan.
Well, if you were
cash flow out.
Yeah, if you were refinancing. And by the way, I'm sorry, your math was correct. I don't know why. I usually pick a 10% cap rate to make the math easy. And I was thinking, wait a minute, that's not a $2 million. It'd be a lot less. But no, that's a good illustration. Again, a $100,000 increase in NOI is a peanut compared to some of the metamorphoses I've seen. And when you're talking about a really intensive rehab, it can translate to a ton of money. So, you know, on think about, you know, getting NOI up $500,000, and now you got, what is that, a $10 million scenario, and that's a big distribution on a property that, you know, typically the capital raise on that deal, you might be able to return, you know, 50 to 70% or more of the investor's initial capital. Now with lower LTVs, that's easier said than done to get 50 to 70%. It's still a big number, though. And that's how we make money. Because, by the way, when you refinance, what happens to the property, Dan? Does it go anywhere? Anybody else own it?
You still got it.
Right. And you've still got a lender that's giving you, let's just call it 60% of the money you need to own the asset, and only taking, I don't know, what, 5% would be a reasonable number right now? That's all their share of the profits are? That's insane. It's insane.
If you get a 5% 30-year loan with even a five-year balloon on it, that's a fat hog right now.
Well, it's a good deal. Hey, let's take one more break. We're going to have to hustle if we're going to get through two syndications, but let's go ahead and get rid of the break, and we'll be right back fairly quickly, and we'll get started on at least one of the syndications we've got lined up, maybe two. Okay, Dan?
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough.
Okay, welcome back to the Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and my guest host again, Dan Dubose, CPA. And, Dan, I haven't mentioned how people can connect with us if they want to talk to us about their real estate investment plans, or maybe they want to talk about long-term health care issues. You know, we had a call this week actually from a client that was giving us a very sad story about the long-term health care cost issue they had with one of the parents or of one of the our clients' two spouses, and it reminded me how we really don't talk near enough about some cost-effective, tax-effective insurance strategies. And I don't mean long-term health care insurance strategies for dealing with coverage of long-term health care. You want to mention, Dan, just real quick, how we can accommodate that scenario at a reasonably cost-effective or in a cost-effective way?
I don't know what you're talking about, Nathan, specifically.
Well,
the IUL?
Using an index universal life policy.
Index universal life policies that can help you with your long-term care costs that should it come about. You know, you could
have chronic illness.
Yeah, chronic illness. Or you get, what is it, two of the six daily living
tasks,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, and I guess all I want to make people aware of is, yes, it's insurance, and yes, I wouldn't say detest it. We're not a fan of insurance per se, except for the reasons that we're talking about, where you can buy a policy like it's not every policy now. It's not even every index universal life policy. Right. It's got to be structured correctly. There's a limited number of companies that offer them, and you can really mess it up. You can actually turn it into a taxable event versus a scenario where it might cost you little, if anything, to add the rider to the index universal life coverage. And then if you or whoever you've got on the policy needs the funds to pay for skilled nursing, assisted living, et cetera, and again, you've got to qualify, you can actually take your death benefit out before you die to cover those costs. And there's no taxability, assuming you stay within the limit is based on where you live, Dan, or is it a flat $10,000 a month? I've forgotten what it is. It's enough money to cover the scenario in Texas for the most part, right?
Yes.
I think in any event, Dan and I are going to start speaking more and more about this topic. We know it doesn't involve real estate per se, but it does involve you being prepared for retirement. That's right. And it's not just the index universal life. There's certain types of annuities, you know, and we talk about guaranteed returns. And, you know, they are, in a sense, guaranteed just because the major A-plus rated insurance companies, we've never had a major default, and theoretically there's a lot more in reserves than there is in the apartment buildings that we're investing in, and I understand
it's actual.
Yeah, well, I understand everybody's got to have a place to live. That's kind of the unspoken reserve, but you know, the reality is there's no A plus rated insurance company standing behind that annuity contract, right, Dan? And then, you know, we look at some charitable strategies, charitable gift annuities, charitable installment agreements, where if you've got assets that have value, they can be transferred or conveyed and turned into annuity-type payment streams, generate a huge tax write-off up front. Again, these are strategies we use in our planning with our clients. And we're going to start talking more about some case studies, et cetera, on the air, because they absolutely fit a number of people that listen in. Dan, real quick, which project, Miami one or the one in South Texas, are we going to hit?
I think the South Texas thing needs to be talked about simply because it's in our back door yard, so so to speak, but it's also a more typical deal that our people might want to get into or look at, at least. It's a small deal what we've seen a lot of lately. It's significant, though, in that they're increasing their rents over a three-year period 54%, which is pretty outstanding. I think it must be well below market right now, just really totally mismanaged, or some kind of government project that's coming out of government operation.
Well, it's 98% occupied, so that would be your first hint. It's like a 8-unit property I bought in San Antonio that the two sisters were 80 and 81 years old, and when I asked them, well, you know, I've never seen a for rent sign out here in front of this building, and they go, well, you know, when we have an empty, we put a sign up, and it's usually rented by lunchtime. it's like, and how much did you rent it for? And I can't remember the numbers, but Dan, when they told me, it's like, okay, I get it. I understand why you don't keep any empty. And of course, I'm going to go back to what I said a minute ago. There's no piece of real estate that doesn't look better with a tenant in it. I guess, except one that you're renting for under market. That might be, that might be an exception. But well, anyway, go ahead.
Those sisters probably had no debt on it either, did they?
Oh, no. No, they didn't. And thankfully...
it was all their money. Every nickel of it was their money.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And they went over there and put the trash out themselves, so to speak, right? They didn't pay for anything that wasn't something they couldn't do. Anyway, go ahead, because we've only got a couple minutes left here.
I think significant part of this is that they're capping this one at 6% at their... you know, projections out at the three-year level, using 6%
of cost support
after buying it at 4.25%.
It's one of the few transactions we've looked at recently where somebody actually used a rational cap rate for the pro forma for the exit. I mean, you know, it seems like everyone we're looking at, and we've complained about this before, you know, buys it at a 4, 4.5 cap rate, and then they think they're going to sell it at 4.5, and we don't necessarily say they're not, we just don't think that's the likelihood. We think the rates will continue to go up, and you know, 3 to 5 years out, a 6 cap is going to look pretty good, is what I would suggest. Or that's one of the possibilities. I'm not saying that's the only scenario that might happen, but anyway, okay. What's the other – there's a few things that they point out that I think are noteworthy. There's no signage currently. Did you see that, Dan?
Oh, yeah. I read that in the write-up, yeah.
I guess at 98 – but they're kind of like the old sisters, right? It's like when something empties up, there's probably a neighbor that's – or one of the tenants is telling somebody else, right? There's nothing like personal referral. So, anyway – let's see what else. I guess home prices, the supply of homes isn't all that great in that area, and the ones that are going up. The size of these units at 1,050 a square foot is pretty noteworthy.
That's big.
And I mean, these are, I don't know, you can look at images and see, well, I don't know, they got stainless appliances. I guess that unit's been made ready. They're not bad looking for, I don't know. What are you thinking, Dan, on acquisition? It's at least a B or so? What do they say it is? I don't remember.
70,000 per unit.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Dan, we've got less than a minute to go here. I just had a little bird whisper in my ear. I'm going to thank you again for coming on board this week.
My pleasure, sir. Thank you.
Next week, hopefully I'll be connected the minute we start or the second we start instead of having the hiccup. But anyway, that's true. That's true. And for those of you that tuned in, thank you for listening. We hope you'll join us again this time next week. We'll try to find Well, we've actually still got a deal we didn't get to this week in Miami we'll talk about. And we'll be back here same time, same station. Next week will be the what, June 4th? I don't have a calendar in front of me. Somewhere.
June
4th. Yeah, that's right. Okay. Well, we'll look forward to having you tune in again at that time. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.